This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
It is good to be with you this morning. And I was just talking to Ryan about, creating interesting financial reports. It may or may not be possible. It may depend more on the person reading them than on the person creating them. I don't know. My goal this morning maybe is not to make it so interesting as it is to make it helpful. I'm passionate about reports that actually clearly communicate information to the people that are reading them. So why do I care about this particular subject? One reason is integrity. So the use of financial resources is one of the best measures that I know of to see the integrity of a person or an organization. How are they using their money? You know, I've said for many years that there are two ways to hide things in a financial report. And maybe you want to write these down in case you ever need to hide something. No, I'm kidding. But there are two ways to hide things in a financial report. One is to not put it in. You know, to just intentionally leave it out. The other is to give people everything, give them all the details. So just as an illustration, your ministry has a staff retreat, and you go off on the staff retreat. The board has said, yes, we want you to do this. But afterward, you realize the staff retreat went way over the budget, and it's kind of embarrassing. So you kind of like to put it in the financial reports, but not really talk about it. One way to hide it is to lump it in with payroll and benefits, right? You know. Payroll and benefits is always a huge category, so it just disappears. You just don't talk about it. The other way is to break it down. You could break it into, well, food, and there's lodging, there's travel, there's contract labor, there's supplies, there's, you know, all these things that went into it. You break it down into all these tiny little pieces, and it doesn't look so big. Two ways to hide things in a financial report. Either don't put them in, or else put all the details in to where nobody sees them or their eyes glaze over, and we just move on. I am not suggesting you should do either one of these. My goal today is to show you ways to clearly communicate reality to your board, to your donors, and read the financial reports to gain information from them. Second reason I care about this subject is need. One of the common complaints that I get, especially from board members, is that they have a very difficult time getting the information they need from their finance reports. Maybe that's because they have trouble getting the financial reports created in time. Maybe that's because they don't understand what is being presented. Maybe that's because their bookkeeper doesn't really understand what the board needs in order to make good decisions. So hopefully we can go through some of those things this morning. The third thing is effectiveness. We need to know what we have, where it came from, where it's going in order to be effective as a ministry. Zig Ziglar has a quote that I've appreciated. He says, money isn't everything, but it ranks right up there with oxygen. You know, you aren't going to survive very long in your ministry without money, without finances. And you need a clear understanding of where the money's coming from, where the money's going, so that you can make good decisions in your ministry. Just a note this morning about terminology. When I'm talking about various terms and so forth this morning, I will be using the terminology that QuickBooks uses. So I'm guessing some of you probably use QuickBooks in your ministry. I've used QuickBooks for many years. That's what many of my clients use. And so I'm familiar with that, with their terminology. I'm going to tend to show you reports that come from there. I'm going to tend to use that terminology. It's not the only valid terminology. If your financial software or your financial reports use a different terminology, I think you'll be able to get the concepts and it makes sense of the wording. So we're going to start with looking inward. Understanding your finances so that you can explain it to other people. There's five key questions that we're going to be answering in two essential reports. The first report that we'll be looking at is the profit and loss report. This report is sometimes called the income and expense statement or the statement of financial activities. In an audited financial statement, typically it would be the statement of financial activities. And the basic questions that this report answers, one of them is how much money came in, where did the money go, how much money is left. Three basic questions that we are answering through the financial, through the profit and loss report. How much money came in? Where did the money go? How much money is left? Basic format of a profit and loss statement is that you have the income, you have the expense, you have the net income. How much money came in? How much money went out? How much money is left? Honestly, this is the, you know, there you go. That's your profit and loss. That's the basics of a profit and loss. Typically, it's helpful to have a few more details. So, in the income section, income section would come first on a profit and loss, and your income can be arranged in a variety of different formats. You might find it helpful to arrange them in a variety of different formats. Should also mention that the financial reports that I'm presenting here, there is a copy in your handout. If you want to scribble on it, the second page of your handout is a copy of the financial of the profit and loss. Then I also have a balance sheet, and the numbers that are listed in the report are also on the report that you have, so you can kind of follow along where we're at. But I just want to point out a couple of options that you might want to consider in your financial reports. Now, again, there isn't necessarily a right and wrong way of presenting the information in these reports or grouping the information in various categories, but I just want to show you a couple of options to get you thinking, what are the ways that I can clearly present the information in our financial reports so that our board can make sense of the information? Because, honestly, a board of directors typically is not able to really digest everything in the financial reports. You'd be wasting their time if you would be asking them to. I sometimes have jokingly said that when it comes to the finance report and the agenda in a board meeting, the question is, do we have any money? If the answer is yes, then we go on. If the answer is no, then we spend the rest of the time talking about fundraising. I don't know about you. If you sat in board meetings, honestly, sometimes it feels a little that way. But one of the ways that you might find helpful to organize your financial reports is to think about the type of income that has come in. Donations, for example, donations versus fundraisers and interest. So these are the types of income that has come in. Some examples are things like sales, donations, tuition, material donations if you're tracking gifts in kind. Is one way that you can arrange income. Another way to arrange income is by source. So you might think about, okay, who's giving the donations? Is this coming from individuals? Is it coming from churches and so forth? And so it can be helpful, especially to see if you have sponsorships, to see how much of the income has come from sponsorships or how much has come from fundraisers. Income can also be organized by designation, where whether the money is restricted for a particular purpose or whether it's unrestricted. It can be another helpful thing to see in the finance reports. You might also have lines that show income for a particular project or for staff development, for new computer equipment, undesignated, and so forth. Income can also be arranged by program. So, for example, how much money came in for the children's home, how much came in for the clinic, how much came in for the school. It can be helpful to see that in the financial report. I would also encourage you, though, to use sub-accounts or sub-classifications for a lot of these details, because then you also have the option of collapsing the report and condensing the information. So for a lot of users, seeing how much came in unrestricted donations is all they need to know. For others, seeing, you know, did it come from businesses or churches is helpful information. So having those as sub-accounts allows you to collapse those to summarize the report. When you are setting up or deciding how to present your financial reports, keep in mind what is going to be required for regulatory or tax reporting. I'm not necessarily saying you need to structure your financial reports to mirror the 990 or the audit report or something like that. You can probably take the information and put it in a format that, you know, to figure out what number goes on these various reports. But keep it in mind that you will need certain information when it comes to getting your audit done, when it comes to getting the 990 done, if either of those apply to you. And so you do want to make sure that you can get that information, that you're not going to have to dig into the details and restructure a bunch of information in order to get this necessary information out, because that is something that you will have to do on an annual basis. And so keeping that in mind when you're creating, you're setting up your accounts can be very helpful. But also say, don't try to design your reports to fit every possible need in one report. You're going to wind up with way too many categories and descriptions, and it's just going to be extremely confusing for anybody that you try to train in to do bookkeeping for your organization if you're trying to track everything all in one report. It's much better to utilize a range of reports. For example, you can pull up reports by donor to get that information. You can pull up reports. In fact, you can't even it's possible that you wouldn't even want to track, you know, the various types of unrestricted donations on your profit and loss. You might want to use a donor report to do that. It's definitely possible to avoid cluttering the main report. You can get donations by item, or, you know, sales by item. That type of thing would be the kind of reports that you could run separately. You don't have to try to put all that detail into one financial report. So this is where the money came in, or where the money came from. We now move to, where did the money go? Cost of goods sold is an account that is somewhat optional. A lot of ministries may or may not see cost of goods sold on their financial reports. The goal of cost of goods sold is to list expenses that are going to vary in proportion to your income. So, for example, if you are a bookstore and you're selling books, as sales go up, the cost of books is going to go up. And you just know that that's going to be reality. And we'll get into some of the percentages later, but you approach that expense on a financial report differently than you do other expenses that should stay stable. So, for example, if from 1 month to the next you see that rent is increasing, you know, month after month, well, what's going on there? You know, there's something going wrong here. We need to look into this and see what's going on. On the other hand, if you see that the cost of books is increasing month after month, but the cost or the income from sales of books is also increasing, no problem. As long as the percentage is not changing. So, for example, if your books cost 50% of what you sell them for, you would expect the percentage to stay relatively stable from month to month, to quarter to quarter, but the number might increase as the sales increase. Cost of goods sold is very common in business context, but it's not so common for nonprofits. You could put discounts in this section if you offer something for sale that you would occasionally give discounts for. Gross profit appears after the cost of goods sold. That's basically income minus cost of goods sold. Expenses. Expenses are typically listed by type of expense, and again, use sub-accounts for details that don't apply to everyone. That way you can collapse those. The expenses can be listed by program. So, for example, you could, you know, just like you had on the income statement, that it's the income was for, you know, the children's home or the day school or various things. You could list expenses by that, but I don't recommend that. If you're using QuickBooks, I would recommend using something like classes to track the different programs. That way you can see a total, a total of salaries, a total supplies, things like that, rather than, well, yeah, there's supplies that are part of this program, and there's supplies that are part of this program, and supplies that are part. You end up with, you know, a dozen supplies accounts, all sub-accounts of the various programs. And I don't recommend that. It gets really confusing when you're doing data entry. In some cases, it might be best, but in most cases, there are other ways of tracking the various programs for your ministry, or the expenses that relate to the programs. Again, be aware of reporting requirements for your tax return, for your audit. What is the information that they're going to be asking for? And one of those pieces of information for the 990 typically is you have to be able to break up your expenses by program expenses, by administrative expenses, and by fundraising expenses. And so you're going to want to, you know, pay attention to some of those classifications. Those will always be asked for if you're filling out the 990. And so you'll want to make sure that you can get that information from your accounting software. After expenses comes net ordinary income. Ordinary, the definition of ordinary would basically be that it's the income that comes from your normal daily operations. And again, this is a QuickBooks terminology. Your software might call this something different. After net ordinary income, you have other income and expense. Now, what would you put in a category like that? Some examples could be things like for income, maybe capital donations. Keeping some things out of the ordinary income section will allow you to see how's the operation of the ministry doing versus all this other stuff. And by other stuff, you know what I mean. You know, it's the one-time donation or it's the one-time project. It's the things that weren't in the budget, but the need came up. COVID was one that just wreaked havoc in some people's, in some ministries' financial statements. Whoever put a line in their financial statements for personal protective equipment before, for PPE, but I suspect some of your ministries, suddenly the expenses skyrocketed for that particular thing. Maybe that should go into a other expense. Who would have thought of, you know, some ministries got into food distribution that had never done food distribution before. And so suddenly they have huge amounts of both income and expense that were not in the budget and are going to look really strange in a report that is compared to the budget. Because suddenly, oh, our donations are, you know, up 75%. You know, great, let's expand our budget next year. Well, hang on. Maybe there was something going on that is not normal. It's not in the ordinary income section. So you might want to think about having a section in your financial reports where you track some of these things that are not regular recurring budgeted items. QuickBooks would use the other income expense section to track some things like this, things like capital purchases, depreciation, things that don't necessarily, you're not necessarily fundraising for, you're not necessarily needing to budget for them in order to have a balanced budget, and yet they have to show up somewhere on your financial reports. Some examples of other expenses could be interest, currency exchange gain or loss if you're operating with a foreign currency and so forth. After the expense section, you have the net income. This would be a combination of both the net ordinary income and any other income and expenses. I'd like to get into some comparisons here, and I apologize for the small print on the screen. You can maybe read the handout more easily than you can read what's on the screen, but I'd like to get into some comparisons because context is critical. If I told you that working for a ministry, and last year they had $450,000 of donations. Is that good? Is that bad? Any idea? I mean, $450,000 for the ministry that had $200,000 last year would be fantastic. $450,000 for the ministry that had $700,000 last year, not so good. Context is critical. You have to think about context when you think about looking at your financial reports. Now, there's a couple of ways that you can do analysis on a financial report. One is what's termed vertical comparisons. So when you're thinking about vertical comparisons, you're essentially comparing numbers in the same column. So you're going vertically, comparing those numbers. Some examples of that could be things like percent of income. You might want to have a percent of income number here for each of the income lines. So that's helpful to think about what percent of our income comes from donations, what percent of our income comes from programs, what percent of our income comes from businesses versus churches versus individuals, and things like that. So thinking about vertical comparisons and how we can compare the numbers with each other in the financial report. It's especially important if there are revenue-generating programs to know how much of our revenue is coming from these programs. Is our program 50% supported by donations? Is it 20% supported by donations? And, you know, the other 80% comes from program revenue. So running vertical comparisons can be very helpful. What percent of our income is unrestricted versus coming in for a specific purpose? What percent of our income is going to a particular expense? So maybe at the end of the year, you come out with essentially a $0 bottom line. What percent of our income went to payroll? What percent of our income went to program versus going to administrative? Some various vertical comparisons that you can do. It's particularly important with cost of goods sold and gross profit and the net profit. So if you are budgeting to always have, 10% surplus every year, what is your net income number? Is that actually reflecting that? What percent is your profit of your total income? Things like that. Horizontal comparisons are also extremely important. Comparing, for example, same period last year. How did we do this year compared to last year? Compare a column in there saying how much did our finances change from the previous year, or possibly a percent change. Did we, 50% up or down, or, and so forth. You can compare, it can be helpful to compare not only last year, but also last quarter, last month. Where's the trend going for our ministry? Some other comparisons you might want to think about are year-to-date numbers. What percent was last quarter of the year-to-date number? Some things like that. You could compare it to budget. One of the most common reports that I run for boards is a comparison to budget. So showing what we're doing so far this year-to-date, what the full-year budget is, and then a column for a percent of budget. So, are we at 70% of budget? Are we at 20% of budget? I find it more helpful, actually, and this is a preference, not a right or a wrong, but I find it more helpful to have the full-year budget and year-to-date information than to try to prorate the budget and say, well, we're 50% of the way through the year, so we're going to put in 50% of the budget. Some people like to budget on a monthly basis, and that's fine. If you want to go to the work of actually budgeting on a monthly or quarterly basis, that's fine. I find it to be helpful to actually have the full-year budget so that you can see, okay, how much is left in the budget versus how much have we spent already. I find that to be more helpful than saying, okay, this as of this date, we are, the budget as of this date is this much, and the year-to-date information is this much, because I want to know how much do we have left for the end of the year, for the rest of the year. Now, again, that's me. I've heard from other board members that they want to see a year-to-date budget as well as a year-to-date actual. That's fine. No problem there. It's just a preference that I have. So this is the profit and loss report. We move on to the balance sheet, where we answer the next two questions. Where's the money? How much do we have? And who do we owe money to? Two other critical questions that you need to answer from the finance report. Where's the money? Well, before I go there, I'm going to go into just the basics of the balance sheet. It's called a balance sheet because the two halves always balance. Assets always equal liabilities and equity. Now, what do I mean by that? Assets is what you have. So that's your building, that's your bank accounts, that's your whatever it is that you have, your inventory, whatever it is that you have as an organization. Liabilities is what belongs to somebody else. And equity is what belongs to you. So thinking about it another way, everything you have belongs to somebody. Either it belongs to the bank because they have a lien on it, or it belongs to you because over the years it has accumulated in your organization. So assets will always equal liabilities plus equity. Whatever you have always equals what other people own plus what you own in your organization. So where is the money? Well, it could be in current assets. Current assets are going to be things like bank accounts, obviously. These are assets that you have right now. They're also going to be things like accounts receivable, loans receivable, if you expect to receive them within a year. So the definition of a current versus long-term or fixed is typically the one-year marker. So if you expect to receive this money in more than a year. It might be a long-term asset, a long-term receivable, versus if it is expected to be received within a year, be in current assets. Current assets, of course, cash would always be in current assets because you have it. Things like that. So we have current assets. We also have fixed assets. Fixed assets would be things like land, would be things like equipment, would be things like buildings, and so forth. It would also include accumulated depreciation. Now, one of the confusing things sometimes in financial reports is that as things wear out and you're depreciating them on your financial reports, you'd think you would just subtract them out of the original purchase account, right? I mean, it just comes right back out. The technical way of doing it is actually to have a separate accumulated depreciation account where all the accumulated depreciation goes in there. When you do get rid of an asset, whether you sell it, whether you dispose of it, that would then need to be removed from there as well as removed from your list of fixed assets. But these are just some examples of things that would show up in a fixed assets section of a financial report. Fixed assets might also include, or I'm sorry, asset. The asset list might also include an indicator of what funds are restricted and what funds are unrestricted. Sometimes people will have sub-accounts of their bank account to track restricted funds. So how much of the money that's in this bank account can we go spend? How much of it is restricted for a capital project, for some other restricted need? It can be helpful to track that in the assets section. Get a little complicated. I'm happy to dive into that in a little more detail if that interests you. Get into the liabilities section. Who do we owe money to? So assets is what we have. Liabilities is what is owed to someone else. Current liabilities would be things like credit cards, accounts payable, things that you are planning, probably a line of credit, for example, things that you're planning to pay off within a year. So I mentioned current versus fixed in assets would be 1 year versus longer than 1 year. In liabilities, we have current assets that would include, if you're using the accrual method of accounting, would include accounts payable as current liabilities. We don't have fixed liabilities because we don't want them to be fixed. Hopefully they're not permanent, you know, so we have long-term liabilities because there are some liabilities that would be paid off in more than a year, but the terminology is slightly different there. Long-term liabilities would show up after current liabilities. You end up with the total liabilities at the bottom. Equity is the third main section of a balance sheet report. So assets equal liabilities plus equity. Equity is what you own. So this is going to include, in QuickBooks terminology, retained earnings and net income. Retained earnings is income from prior years. Net income is the current year profit that you're showing on your profit and loss. In an audited financial statement, these would the equity would show up as assets with donor restrictions and assets without donor restrictions. And so you will see that designation in the equity section on an audited financial report. The profit, the net income number in your balance sheet will always equal the net income number in your profit and loss, or at least it should. I certainly hope. You know, one of my embarrassing moments at Faith Builders was when I realized after the report went out to the board that I had sent out a balance sheet that didn't balance. I don't know what happened with the – I doubt anyone even noticed. We gave them a replacement at the board meeting, and it was all good. But I don't remember what happened. But typically I export the reports from – if I'm working in QuickBooks, I export them to Excel so that I can make them look a little more clear and so forth. Evidently at some point – a number got changed, and I did not miss it. I did not catch it until the report went out. I can tell accountants sometimes when I'm talking to people. I can tell accountants from non-accountants when I say that, you know, it was really embarrassing. I sent out a balance sheet that didn't balance. The accountants know instantly what I mean, and they're like, "Oh wow, how'd you do that?" Everybody else is like, "You did what? Okay, it's all good." So, some comparisons in the balance sheet report. Vertical comparisons. So I mentioned that you can do vertical comparisons on a profit and loss. You can also do them on a balance sheet. These are frequently used by bankers to think about things like leverage and what percent of their assets do they have in liabilities. So how deeply are they in debt compared to what they own? So you see things like percent of assets or percent of liabilities. What percent of assets is our cash? So it could be that we have lots and lots of, you know, building and land and lots of fixed assets. So our assets look terrific, but only 2% of our assets is actually cash or is current. Well, okay, now that could indicate we have a cash, we might have a cash flow issue. What percent of our equity are our liabilities? So, for example, if the amount of things that we own, our equity, is, you know, $5 million and our liabilities are $2 million, well, that's a very low, a reasonably low percentage. You own yourself a lot more than what you owe to other people, and so it's going to look like a very stable organization to a banker, for example. So keeping track of some of those comparisons, vertical comparisons, can be helpful in the balance sheet. You can also do horizontal comparisons, comparing this year to last year, comparing this year to last year with a change column saying how much did things change from the previous year, and so forth. I'm going to address just a few common questions that I get from people when they're looking at their financial reports that might be helpful. Maybe you're thinking the same thing. One is, why is my profit and loss showing so much profit? And where is the money if we had this much profit? Well, the issue can be things like fixed assets. So, for example, if you have a building project and you are trying to raise money for this $2 million building that you need to put up, when the money comes in, it is all going to hit donations. And so it's going to look like, you know, your donations, your income really went up. That flows directly to the bottom line, of course, so it looks like you have enormous profit this year. The problem is that when you put that building up, it is not an expense. That money is going to find its way right over here on the balance sheet into fixed assets. So you're going to end up seeing a huge profit on your profit and loss, and there's no cash around because you spent the cash. The cash went into the building. Problem is that it is still considered an asset of the organization. And so you do end up with sometimes, especially in some years, you end up with situations where it looks like the reality that you feel on the ground is not reflected in the financial statements. Honestly, it's not really a good way of avoiding that, although I'll address some of that just a bit later. Another common question I get is, how do we budget for debt reduction? So let's say we want to pay down our debt. Where do we put that in the budget? Well, unfortunately, there isn't really a place to put that because most people budget on a profit and loss basis. So you're going to be budgeting income, you're going to be budgeting expenses, and there isn't really paying down debt is not an expense. Paying down debt is a decrease in your liabilities, but it's not going to show up on your profit and loss as an expense. How do you get around that? There's not really a good way. One way that I have done in some organizations is to create a fictitious account. I know that sounds like a bad word, right? But essentially what I do is I create an expense account that is called debt reduction. And you put you budget in it. You will never put an actual expense in it. So that is something that will look strange on your budget to actual comparisons. But if you want to make sure that you have a bottom line of zero on your budget, on your profit and loss budget, you might want to put a debt reduction line in there. Another way is just simply to communicate with your board that, hey, we need $50,000 of net income in our budget in order to make our debt payments. So, you know, a balanced budget for our organization is a $50,000 bottom line. That certainly is that's the way it will show up on your financial reports, and can be a good way of communicating that with the board, so they understand that yes, we do need to make principal payments on our debt, and so we will have to have a positive bottom line in order to make those payments. A third question that I'm often asked is, are we required to track fixed assets? Can't we just write them off as we buy them? Well, yeah, you can if you are not concerned about having your financial reports match your tax return or match your audited financial statements. You can, for internal management purposes, just write them off as they come. I would urge you to exercise caution there, however, because what about the banker? So the banker calls you up and says, hey, to renew your line of credit, we need a copy of your financial report. Your balance sheet isn't going to look good if all you list are your liabilities and you don't list any fixed assets. Suddenly it's going to look like you have almost no assets in your organization. So, you know, there are some ways that will come back to bite you sooner or later. It is also much easier to keep track of fixed assets when you buy them than 10 years down the road to have to go back and recreate them, because now for the first time we are needing to do an audit. And so now we have to recreate all this information. Much better to track them up front. I'm sorry, the complexity of trying to, especially in growing organizations, the complexity of trying to accurately communicate what the bottom line means when your organization is rapidly expanding is very difficult, because it's going to look like you have an enormous bottom line because you're putting a lot of money into fixed assets. And so they're not going to show up on the expense report. So that can be difficult. You might need to run several reports and kind of show how the money moves. That's one of the things that I really like about the comparison report, comparing where we were last year. So when you look at the comparison, excuse me, look at this particular comparison report, you see that the see the long-term liabilities have gone down by 12,966. That essentially means that $12,000 of cash has gone from the bank account into the liabilities. And so even though we might have a big profit, we're probably not going to have a big increase in our bank account, because that has gone to debt reduction. The other thing that the comparison does is you can see how much you've put into the various types of fixed assets. And so you can see, based on this report, where the money has went. If you end up with a large bottom line and don't have any cash in the bank to show for it. Okay. A few words about board financial reports. The most common reports that I run for a board of directors, and this varies based on, you know, which organization we're dealing with, but the most common ones that I run, the profit and loss actual versus budget with a percent of budget, as well as a profit and loss comparison with the previous year with the dollar change amount, because those will show those will show where we're at in relation to our budget and where we're at in comparison to the previous year, giving some context to the numbers to try to help them understand, you know, these raw numbers. Well, what do these numbers mean? Giving some comparisons is typically very helpful. Balance sheet comparison to the beginning of the year with the dollar change. One of the big reasons that you need a report like this is because that will show you where the cash went. If you're showing a large bottom line but no money in the bank, well, seeing a balance sheet comparison to the beginning of the fiscal year will show you how much did we pay down debt, how much did we increase our assets, things like that that aren't showing up as expenses, but they aren't cash in the bank. And so it's a helpful report to see that. So we've looked at our organization and tried to understand the financial reports. Now I'd like to move just briefly into how to present a picture of your organization for those outside your organization to understand. The first thing I would say is you need to know your audience. What do they need to know about your organization? Maybe how large is the organization? Your profit and loss is going to show that. Your balance sheet is going to show that. Key pieces of those reports. What do these people care about? Maybe they care about how their money is being spent. So properly reporting the expenses of the organization, maybe grouping it by type of program so they can see, well, we spent this much on this part of the ministry and this much on, you know, this much on the school, this much on the medical camps or whatever it is that your organization does. Does the organization have any reserve fund for emergencies? It's another thing to have that you might want to show, you know, a reserve account. Or maybe you can just see that, well, there's lots of assets and not many liabilities, so kind of indicates a reserve account. How much debt does the organization have? This is something that donors care very much about when they're thinking about the stability of the organization. How much debt is the organization carrying? Organizations have various approaches to this question. Some say we will not go into debt. Some say we want to say, you know, stay a certain percent of our assets, you know, below a certain percent, and so forth. So showing on the reports how much debt the organization has can be very helpful. Something I like looking at when I see a organization's financial reports is how many months of operating expenses do they have in their bank account. So if you take their annual budget, if you know what their annual budget is, divide it by 12, and then divide that number into their cash balance, their bank account balance. And it's surprising. I've often seen somewhere around 2 to 3 months of operating expenses are in their bank account, which doesn't seem like a lot of time, frankly. A lot of us are in ministries that depend heavily on donations, depend heavily on prayers to bring those donations. And, you know, it can sometimes feel like the work of God is really fragile when you look at the financial reports. You know, just a little change in donation amounts and suddenly, shoo, the work disappears. And yet, it doesn't. The interesting thing is God provides. And yet, anyway, as board members, sometimes we wish that there would be a few more months of runway so that we didn't have to constantly be thinking about where the next dollar is coming from. But God does provide. How many months of operating funds does the organization have? Just some questions that your donors might be thinking about. So think about your donors or whoever you're presenting the financial reports to, whether it's board members or donors. This is probably the most important question, is know your audience, know what they care about. Think about what they care about, what they want to see. Simplify for greater understanding. So some of us, okay, there are geeks in this world, and I claim to be one of them, I guess. But some of us, when we receive an annual report from an organization, we go straight to the back because, you know, okay, take this the way I mean it. But, you know, the rest of it is just fluff and spin. You know, it's here where the real stuff is, you know, and the numbers in the back. Not everyone's like that. So for the sake of your audience, please, when you're doing a financial report, also include pages like this that breaks it down and says, actually, here are the types of things that we distributed and how many of them we distributed. Break it down for them in terms of you know, what your gifts provided last year. Here's the kind of thing that your money did. Don't just present a whole massive list of numbers. Simplify it for them. Try to break it down in ways that they can actually get a hold of and think about, okay, what is this organization actually doing with my money? And graph it. When it all possible, or whenever possible, put a graph in. Something that helps people visualize. So I gave you three samples that I'd also put in your handout, but some things that you might consider. So here's our actual donations this year to date versus our budget. That gets my attention. Okay, you know, probably this is showing up at a, you know, a November newsletter because they're banking on a lot of year-end donations, right? You know, isn't that how that works? About October, November, things are, you're really wondering what's going to happen, and then December 31st, you realize, oh, God provided again. Maybe this year comparison to last year. Maybe, you know, expenses. Here's how much we spent in this ministry versus this particular part of the ministry versus last year. Comparing it for the donors to be able to see, instead of needing to look through the column of numbers and, okay, this number compared to this number. Now put it in the graph so they can see it. Salary and wages take up this percent of our budget. Okay, that's interesting. I mean, I can see that it's a big number on the finance report, but when you put it this way, oh, that's a sizable chunk of our budget. Travel. Well, maybe we ought to think about, I don't know, not flying first class as much. No, I'm kidding. I doubt you do that in your ministry. But, you know, maybe there are areas of our ministry we need to work on. When you visualize it like that, can be very, very helpful. That brings me to the end of my prepared remarks. What questions do you have what are you facing in your organization that you'd like some feedback on? We can even talk amongst ourselves. We have glad to have Christian with us this morning. He's a professional in this area as well. And so what are your questions? Any questions or response to what you've heard this morning?
On the accumulated depreciation, sometimes the accumulated depreciation in a young organization seems very balanced, but in an older organization, say you do it 10, 20 years there, that number becomes sort of ridiculous, and sometimes the assets value, like most things after 20 years are depreciated, and it looks sort of out of balance. Is there anything you can do with that to make it, or should just, I guess sometimes there the depreciation balance there is to make the tax accountant happy there, and it doesn't have anything to do with the actual health of the organization. You know what I mean?
Yes, there. Yes, absolutely, and that is certainly true. I mean, sometimes you can have massive asset numbers and massive accumulated depreciation. The best I can say probably is pay attention to your depreciable assets listing. So, This is something that we do for especially our individual and small business clients, is we occasionally go through their list of assets and we say, okay, do you actually have all this stuff? I just had a client this year. He's like, okay, you sent me this list. What is this list? Like, there's a lot of stuff on here I haven't had for years. Well, okay, getting it off that list and cleaning up that depreciation list would, you know, partially solve that problem. Yeah. Other than that, I don't really have a good answer for you on that. Some organizations do have an accumulated depreciation number for each particular type of asset. So you might have buildings and then accumulated depreciation for buildings, so that you can see a net building value. If you do that, you can collapse the report to where you see a net buildings, net equipment, net, you know, things like that. Could be one way of thinking about it. Other questions?
How often do you suggest that boards look at it, and who on the board? Like, is it treasurer? Do you expect them to look at it more often, and how involved do you think? Like, monthly, quarterly?
You're saying like the asset listing
the balance sheet, you know?
Balance sheet. It's certainly a good idea, I would say, for the treasurer to be involved on a monthly basis, quarterly at the least. A lot of times what I've seen in organizations is that on a monthly basis, the treasurer or administrator or somebody is looking at the reports. On a quarterly basis, the board is interested, or maybe on a quarterly basis, the executive board or the audit committee of the board, and then, you know, semi-annually or annually, the full board is seeing it, so forth. It's kind of my recommendation. Yes, the smaller the group, the more often they probably need to be looking at the reports, and especially those in management of the organization and administrative functions should be keeping a very close eye on the finances, probably on a monthly basis. One of the complexities can be if there's a lot of adjustments that need to be done to the finances. Depreciation is a classic example. You know, how often do you do a depreciation entry in your books and so forth? Some do it annually when they file their tax returns. Some want to see it more often than that. Probably depends more on your finance staff that you have. Do you have people in the office that are competent to make these adjustments, or is this something the outside accountant does?
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.